Tantor Audio, a division of Recorded Books, presents Vigilante Vampire by Helen Harper, narrated by Saskia Malleveld. Chapter 1. Monster. I perch myself on the motorbike seat, then reach inside my jacket pocket. Pulling out the lurid green lollipop, I carefully unwrap it, then give it an experimental lick. Gooseberry. Figures. I shrug to myself and go all in. The tingling on my tongue isn't entirely unpleasant, but it would be nice if they made these in Oneg. Perhaps I'll write a letter to the company. Across the street, the graveyard is bathed in eerie orange light cascading down from the lampposts. The same light is reflected in the puddles underfoot. It makes it easy to see the cluster of witches, even as they huddle together with their backs to me. Their chanting rises and falls. I could interrupt them now, but I'm vaguely curious as to what they're up to. Or rather, I know what they're up to. I'm just not sure about why. Raising the dead takes a lot of effort. A car pointlessly equipped with a modified exhaust roars past. It's designed purely to draw attention to itself. No doubt it's been blazing a loud path through the streets of London for some time. I roll my eyes. Boy racer. Even the witches don't pay attention to it. I crunch down hard on the lollipop, the sour shards melting into nothing in my mouth, and jog after it. The lights up ahead are red, so unless the driver is prepared to ignore every rule of the road, I'll have a few moments to deal with it. The car comes to a screeching halt, but remains on the clutch, cylinders firing. It's a hell of a noise. On the off chance that the occupant is looking in their mirror, I waggle my fingers in a friendly wave, but whoever is inside the tinted windows is more concerned with themselves. No one exits in an angry fugue, and no one notices when I reach the rear and crouch down to give the shiny exhaust a sharp pull. My skin sears as I touch the metal, and there's the faintest tinge of burning flesh. No matter. In theory, I should use a wrench to detach the bolts from the engine cylinder, but I've got vampiric strength. With two sharp tugs, I pull away the exhaust. The edge clatters down to the tarmac, with the remainder now barely clinging to the car's underside. I step back as the traffic lights switch to green, and the car accelerates away. The noise is even louder now, but there's also a satisfying array of sparks. The car lurches to a halt less than 50 feet away, and a white guy with unbecoming dreadlocks stomps out. He glares at the car, then flicks a glance in my direction. I toss the lollipop stick to one side and examine my fingers. The blisters are already starting to heal. I prod one with detached curiosity. There's a zip of pain across my palm. I shrug and cross the road. Whatever. Time to deal with the witches. The four of them remain preoccupied with their graveside efforts. Although the hapless driver shouts at me, his garbled rage makes his words indistinct, and neither the witches nor I bother to look around. I vault over the iron fence and weave through the graves. Considering how much it's rained lately and how soggy the earth is, I suppose they've done well to reach the coffin this quickly. A hazy purplish smoke is rising up around them, and there's the crackle of magic in the air. The witch nearest me flings back his hood and raises his arms up. There's the sharp sound of splintering wood. I guess the corpse is finally ready to make an appearance. I glance around and note the ring of salt. At least these guys aren't completely stupid. It's got to be a money thing, I decide, as the remaining three witches edge closer and peer down. If they were raising a body to do their dirty deeds for them, they wouldn't bother with the salt. It creates almost as effective a barrier as any expensive spell, and the corpse would be unable to pass across it. That means they just want to talk to it. The trouble with the dead is that unless their spirits remain tethered in ghost form, they don't usually make much sense. I lean back on my heels and wait. The reek of rot and decay is already strong. The chanting grows, reaching a crescendo just as I catch a glimpse of the corpse itself between the witches. A woman. Her flesh is falling away from her skull in strips, and there's definite ooze. She's been dead for at least a couple of months.
"Who is my father?"
demands the first witch. I raise my eyebrows. Not money, then. I've stumbled across a coven with daddy issues. The dead woman moans. Her lips part and her jaw works as if she's trying to speak. I peer closer. Her tongue has all but rotted away. Even if a spark of intelligence remained, she wouldn't be able to talk. Oh well.
Who is my father?
He asks again, his voice rising. I sigh. All four of them snap around, finally realizing that they're not alone. They gape at me while I fold my arms. You're obviously not going to get an answer, I inform them. One of the witches breaks away, advancing towards me. From underneath his hood, I can make out his pulsating tattoo. It's throbbing with the same ire that's reflected in his eyes. I like the matching outfits, I drawl. Our hooded cloaks are prerequisite for midnight grave incantations. If so, I'm afraid I'm rather underprepared. I unzip my jacket and take it off, dropping it to the side. He snarls, lifting up one pale white hand. He murmurs to himself, clearly preparing to shoot out a vicious spell in my direction. It's a wasted effort. He's already spent far too much of his energy on the necromantic magic. I dodge a stream of light with ease. Then I smile. Just for that, I say, I'm going to make you hurt. I whirl around, leaping into the air and lashing out with my foot. I connect with his chest and he staggers backwards. I thrust out with the base of my hand and slam it into his nose. There's a satisfying crack and he collapses to his knees, blood everywhere. A second witch approaches. She's smarter than her buddy. Rather than attempting a feeble spell, she draws out a sharp, curved blade that glints against the orange light. The other two rush me from opposite sides, lunging for my arms. I duck and roll backwards, and they collide with each other. The witch with the blade ignores their pained cries and continues to advance. I know you, she hisses. I lift up a shoulder in a show of studied nonchalance. I'm famous. Am I supposed to be impressed? I'll give you my autograph when we're done. Her lip curls. A heartbeat later, the knife leaves her hand and flies towards me. It's no throwing dagger, and it's certainly not aerodynamic. She has just enough magic juice inside her to murmur a few words to help it on its way. I spin as quickly as I can. Rather than embedding itself in my stomach, it hits my side. I frown, twist back to face her. I think you nicked a kidney. I glance down. The hilt is made of bone, carved with a pretty inlay. I brush it with the tip of my index finger. Human? That's pretty icky. She flings herself at me with an ear-piercing scream. Hampered by the blade, which remains in my side, I allow her to body-slam me. We both fall to the ground, her hands flail, her nails scraping into my exposed skin. I lift my head up and thrust my forehead into hers. Dazed, she falls back, and I push her off me, then get to my feet. I take out a cable tie from inside my jacket and loop it around her wrists. The two who smacked into each other are back on their feet. They look from me to their friend and back again. Then they share a single mutual glance before turning and fleeing. I don't think so. I crouch down and pick up two smooth pebbles, hefting them in my hands. I take aim and let the first one launch. It glides through the air with perfect precision, striking the first witch on the back of the head. He crashes to the ground while the other keeps going. Not wasting another second, I throw the other pebble. Unfortunately, this time my aim is slightly off and it hits his ear. It must have done more damage than I realized, however, because he veers off course, smacking into a gravestone and flipping over it with a groan. He doesn't get back up. The reanimated corpse has emerged entirely from the hole in the ground. She stands on the edge, wavering and scowling. A single maggot crawls out of her eye. We stare at each other for a moment. Hello. Her jaw moves, as if she's trying to remember how to speak. When no words come out, she lifts her shoulder in a slow, stuttering facsimile of a shrug. She remains standing for one more long moment, then turns her back and drops down into the open grave. I sidle over and peer down as she slides back into the broken wooden box, closing her eyes and falling still. At least someone around here knows their place. I bind the wrists of the remaining three witches and drag them into the salt circle, arranging them around their own handiwork. I keep an eye on the half-destroyed coffin, but there's not even a flicker of movement. All that work, I think, for such a short-lived and pointless spell. The witch who wanted the information groans and glares.
We weren't doing anything wrong,
I tut.
He obviously thinks I was born yesterday. It's against the law to bring the dead back to life. He spits. I only wanted to know who that whore had slept with. You're planning a family get-together. He snarls. I'm dying. If I can find my real father, then I have the chance of a transplant. You've just sentenced me to death. Aw. I jut my bottom lip. That's a crying shame. I nod to myself. Still, it's useful information.
Why?
I shrug. I'm hungry, and I don't fancy tainted blood. His mouth drops open as I take hold of his nearest companion, pulling up her body so I can reach her neck with ease. I let my fangs lengthen, then run my tongue across their sharp tips. A moment later, I sink them into her jugular and drink. Witch blood isn't the tastiest. The magic tends to give it an overly sweet edge, which isn't pleasant. It'll do, though. Once I'm done, I let her drop back down again. She moans pitifully. I take out my camera and snap a picture of all four of them, sending it off with a quick text. The police can take care of the rest. I stand over her for a moment, frowning. There's something I'm forgetting. Then I click my fingers as I remember. I promised you my autograph, I tell her. I do apologize. With one swift yank, I pull the knife out of my side. Sticky blood leaks out, making my skin itch. I ignore it and bend down, grabbing hold of her arm. I carve an initial into the soft flesh of her forearm. It's a bit wonky, but it's unmistakably the letter B. Tears leak out of her eyes. I add another B right next to it, then lean back to admire my handiwork. Not too shabby.
What's wrong with you?
The witch shouts as I pick up my jacket, turn around and start walking back to my bike.
Don't you have a heart?
I climb back over the fence, albeit rather more slowly this time.
Nope.
The souped-up car is still in the middle of the road. There's no longer any sign of the driver. Either he vanished when he saw what was happening in the graveyard, or the demon leaning against the shadowed wall has eaten his heart.
Was that really necessary? X asks.
I cock my head. They were breaking the law. I thought you wanted me to clean up the streets. He pushes himself off the wall and steps into the light. He's not using any kind of disguise, and the dark tattoos covering his face are writhing like snakes.
So far tonight, there have been 3 rapes, 19 burglaries, and 1 attempted murder. And yet you're bothering yourself with a group of petty black witches.
Guilt swells up in my gut. I slam it back down again. I can't help everyone, and you know as well as I do that necromancy of that level requires human sacrifice. They killed someone for that little chat. He quirks an eyebrow.
They killed an elderly man on his deathbed, who had only hours left. Who did you actually help tonight?
A dead woman who deserves to rest in peace. X's black eyes watch me.
This vendetta isn't healthy, Beau. You shouldn't be concerning yourself solely with the witches.
I glare at him. I don't like the witches, and I'm not psychic like X. I can't read people's minds and dart all over London whenever a crime is taking place. If I had known where the more serious offences were occurring, I'd have gone there. He folds his arms.
I am not a wizard. I know your thoughts because you are in front of me. I don't know what is going on in every corner of this city. You are the investigator. Investigate crimes.
I mirror his stance. I just did. Something glitters in his eyes.
Go for a week without approaching any witches, he says.
I'm already your dog, X. There's no need to shorten the leash.
And I'm not your enemy, Beau, he replies softly.
For a brief second his pupils flare, and I wonder whether he's lying. It's not as if I'm likely to call him out on it, though. I blow out air through my cheeks. Fine, I sigh. I'll stay away from the witches. I hook one leg over the bike and start the engine. Was there anything else? Because those crimes aren't going to stop themselves, you know. He tosses me a ball of paper. I catch it with one hand and smooth it out. There's an address on it, somewhere in the East End. What's this?
A stray thought I caught earlier today. Something's going down there tonight, and I thought you would be the ideal person to check it out.
I glance at my watch.
I have things to do, and it's already after one. X doesn't speak. He simply regards me with silent intent. I wrinkle my nose. There's no need to be so intimidating. He doesn't even blink.
I didn't say anything.
You didn't have to, I mutter. He flicks a look at my side.
Doesn't that hurt?
I don't answer. X licks his lips slowly.
You like the pain,
he says. I meet his eyes. I'm not ashamed. It keeps my mind sharp. I wait for him to answer, but his face is an inscrutable mask. What are you thinking, X? You know my thoughts. What are yours?
Check the address out, Beau, he repeats. Medici will keep for another hour or two.
I can't keep anything a damned secret. Yeah, yeah. I rev the engine and take off, accelerating into the inky blackness of the night. The address that X has sent me to is in a decidedly seedy part of town. The damp air has given way to a steady drizzle, and I can already feel irritating drips of cold rain dribbling down my neck and under my collar. I pull the bike up outside and eye the flashing neon sign with disgust. Girls, girls, girls. How wonderful. I watch the entrance for several minutes. It's not exactly a hive of activity. In fact, if it weren't for one man edging nervously up with the club in his sights, I think the place was closed. As it is, when he catches sight of me, he abruptly changes his mind and hurries past instead. I nibble on my bottom lip and make a decision. Forewarned is forearmed, after all. Jogging after him, I jump in front and effectively bar his path. His shoulders droop and his cheeks are still stained with the flush of embarrassment. "What's your problem?" I ask.
Nothing,
he stammers. My eyes drift downwards. No wedding ring and no tan line where a ring should be, so it's not adultery that he's ashamed of. Tell me about the club.
What club?
I give him a look filled with exasperation. He shuffles his feet and attempts to sidestep away from me. He's not getting away that easily. I reach out and draw the tip of my finger along his rough cheek. He flinches. Come on, I coo. You know which club I mean. He backs up just as a car with headlights on full beam sweeps past us. Both our faces are momentarily illuminated. The man cowers. I smile nastily.
You're the Red Angel.
I move in even closer until I'm crowding him and invading his space. Even with the scent of rain all around us, I can still smell the bitter tang of his sweat. You don't have to be afraid of me.
I'm not afraid.
I part my lips, permitting the tips of my fangs to protrude ever so slightly. His Adam's apple bobs up and down as he swallows. Good, I purr. Tell me about the club. Is it a floor show? He nods with such vigour that I start to wonder how his head remains attached to his neck.
Yes, yes, there's a floor show.
I lean my head to one side and drop my eyes, fixing them on his neck. He starts to tremble. Are there private rooms? He squeaks. Sorry, I murmur. I didn't catch that. You'll have to speak up.
Yes.
Why this club? I inquire.
I don't know what you mean.
He's at least a foot taller than me, but he seems to be diminishing in size by the second. I push myself up onto my tiptoes and force him to meet my gaze. Why are you visiting this club? Why not another one? His eyes dart around.
It's the nearest one to my house,
he blurts out. Really? I delve into his pocket before he can react, take out his wallet and flip it open. But it says here that you live in Brighton. That's almost 50 miles away.
I meant hotel. It's close to my hotel.
A flush rises up from his neck. Lies, lies, and more lies. Growing bored, I grab his collar and slam him against the wall. He struggles against my grip, but it's a feeble effort. I tell you what, I coo. I'm willing to let you go, Mr. I glance down at his wallet. Archer, I've already fed tonight after all, but you need to start talking. Otherwise, I might decide I need a little dessert. He stares into my eyes, his body sagging as he acknowledges the truth of what's written in them.
They're young,
he mutters eventually. The girls. He nods. My stomach tightens. How young?
16, maybe 17.
Above the age of consent, how handy. I seriously doubt there's much in the way of consent on the girl's part, even if he's telling the truth. I eye the unfortunate Mr. Archer, and wonder whether he's fooled himself into believing the girls inside are happy to take on board what he's offering. There's no end to what people will make themselves believe in order to salve their consciences. Who's in charge?
Of the club?
He visibly relaxes when he realizes I have bigger fish to fry than one dodgy punter.
The manager is called Malpeter. I've never spoken to him myself, he adds hastily.
Is he a Triber? I ask. Considering X sent me here directly after his warning to stay away from the witches, I'm assured that Malpeter isn't one of their ilk. It doesn't mean that he's not a bloodguzzler or a demon, though. Archer shakes his head.
Human.
Bouncers?
They're human, too.
Interesting. I nod and release him. He staggers away from me in haste, almost tripping over his feet in a bid to get away. I watch his departure with detached curiosity and shrug to myself. Then I pivot round and head back to the front door of the club. I push open the door and am immediately confronted by the thump of music. A burly guy in a monkey suit narrows his eyes at me, obviously surprised by my entrance. A beat later, recognition lights his expression. I launch a sharp, vicious punch to his solar plexus, and he collapses, groaning. I see my reputation precedes me, I tell his fetal-like shape. It's a shame your reaction time is so slow, though. I bend over and reach inside his coat pocket, sliding out the poorly concealed gun. It's scratched and battered. This is a weapon that's seen some action. I eject the clip and throw the now useless hunk of metal back down. It bounces off the back of his head and he grunts. Oops. Stepping over his body, I walk down the narrow corridor. The walls are covered in lurid red paint, and there are framed photos of smiling girls with dead eyes. The distinct smell of marijuana fills the air. I have no doubt that I'll find evidence of stronger stuff too, all the better to ensure pliability. I curl my nails into my palms until I draw blood. The corridor opens into a larger space. The music here is louder. To the front there's a slightly elevated stage with a pole, and a woman in a G-string, stilettos and nothing else, gyrating slowly around it. She's not even making an effort to sway to the beat. There are a few tables in front which are occupied by men whose eyes are almost as glazed as hers, and a brightly lit bar which seems to sell little more than vodka and scotch. Behind it there's an open door leading to yet another corridor. Red light glows from within. From one of the dark corners, a shadow pushes off and approaches. He swaggers past the lighted bar and his features become more distinct. Ugly bastard. There's a jagged scar down one side of his face, and his nose is squashed and bent, as if it's been broken one too many times. I quicken my step, swiping a glass from a nearby table and smashing its rim against the edge. The music continues, but the woman on the stage freezes and stares. All the other punters turn in my direction. A few stand up, then seem to think better of it and sink back down again. One or two glance at the empty corridor behind me, already planning their escape. I ignore them and keep my focus on the advancing brute. His muscles bulge against his ill-fitting suit as he lunges for me. I spin to my left and strike out with the glass, drawing a beaded line of blood down his cheek. Now I'll have a match for that scar. His hands automatically rise up to the wound, while I kick upwards, aiming for his groin. He screams and falls forward. I vault over the bar and wrench the nearest bottle out of its optic. Then I arc out the vodka in a fine spray and casually pull a lighter from my inside pocket. I flick it open and light it. The seated customers start to panic and get to their feet, ready to bolt. I throw the lighter down and there's a roar as the alcohol catches fire, effectively creating a barrier of flames between me and them. The cheap carpet underneath my feet adds fuel to the fire, while they all back away towards the wall. I walk round the other side to the woman and offer her my hand. She stares at me with rigid, wide-eyed fear. "I'm not going to hurt you," I tell her. I'm not sure if she can hear me over the music. She shakes her head and stumbles backwards, the heel on her left stiletto snapping. She kicks off both shoes and turns to run, flitting behind a dirty red curtain. I let her go, picking up the undamaged shoe. The fire is licking at the tables and chairs. The alcohol may well have burnt out within seconds, but these are cheap furnishings. One of the men on the other side of the flames has a mobile phone to his ear. If he's calling the fire brigade, they might get here in time. Then again, they might not. I cast a look over the lot of them, registering all their faces just in case. To a man, they look terrified. Good. I spin around and head for the other corridor, which is lined with doors. At the far end, a fire exit swings open. The woman from the stage, with several others in tow, runs out into the night. Good for her. I leave them to it and focus on the door nearest to me, kicking it open. There's a stained mattress and little else. Above distant shouts, I hear an unmistakable click and duck just in the nick of time. The plaster in the far wall crumbles as a bullet smashes into it. Before my would-be assailant can try again, I turn on the balls of my feet. It's a short, weedy guy wearing a grey suit. "You should pay attention to who you're attempting to kill," I say conversationally, as I wrest the gun from his hand. Guzzler reflexes are no match for humans.
"What do you want?" he hisses.
I take a gamble. "Oh, Malpeter, there's so much that I want." Judging by the expression on his face when I say his name, I'm right. This is the club's manager. I give him a nasty smile and get behind him, then shove him inside the room. There's a rusty bolt on the outside of the door, so I slam it shut, locking him in. He yells loudly. I ignore the noise and examine the lock. Perfect. With one sharp, well-placed kick, I manage to destroy it completely. Now no one's getting in or out of that room without a battering ram. By the time the firefighters get to him, the smoke will have destroyed his lungs. He's toast. I hear him yell again. I shrug, not bothering to answer, then head towards the other high-pitched shouts, which are all coming from the far end and another locked door. I pull open the bolt and peer inside. The shouting stops abruptly, as if someone has hit the mute button, and 12 pairs of unblinking eyes face me. I can see several of them wondering what fresh new hell is now coming their way. The room reeks of feces and vomit, and most of the girls are wearing nothing more than dirty underwear. One of them lets out a small whimper. I doubt any of them has seen their 16th year yet, despite Archer's assertion to the contrary. "Don't worry," I say softly. "Help is on the way." I leave the door open, allowing them free exit if they so desire. None of them makes a move. They're already too conditioned by fear. I try the other rooms. There are 10 in total. These ones are obviously kitted out for business, with actual beds and real sheets. 2 are occupied. The first has an obese, sweaty man who's so involved in his sordid fantasy that he's not heard any of the commotion from outside, and is continuing to lick the pale, half-formed breasts of a dark-haired girl. I glance at the stiletto shoe in my hand. From underneath him, her eyes meet mine with a flicker of dull hope. I throw the shoe, and it embeds itself in his neck. With nothing more than a groan, he collapses. She pushes his dead weight off her and gets to her feet. Then she kicks him. He doesn't move. She kicks him again, absorbed in her actions. I leave her to it. We're far enough away from the fire here. The other occupied room only contains a girl. She's shackled to the bedpost and there's an ugly welt down the side of her face. Her face is streaked with mascara. From underneath the caked-on makeup, the eyes of a teenager gaze out at me. I suck in a breath and stride over, unpicking the lock and freeing her swollen wrist, just as sirens start to filter in from outside. "You're safe now. The police will take care of you." She starts to tremble. I place a reassuring hand on her shoulder as her shaking grows more violent. "No," she moans. "Don't worry. Everything will be all right now." My words fall empty. Both of us know that everything will never be all right. I turn to go. She gasps. "No!" Her accent is strong. It's unlikely she knows much English. She's probably been trafficked here with the promise of a better life. A hard knot forms in my chest. The things we let happen on our own doorstep. "They will help you," I reiterate, my voice strong. Her hand shoots out, curling around my wrist. "No, police. They're the good guys." I have no way of knowing whether she understands me or not. Her grip tightens. "No, police."
Her voice drops to a plaintive whisper.
Please.
I don't have the
Sample complete. Ready to continue?